Welcome to Dugout Study Hall, a remedial course in baseball stats and proud member of the Pitcherlist Podcast Network. I'm your host and expert layman, Matt Goodwin, and I am joined, as always, by your fake baseball economist, Alexander Chase. On this episode, we hang out with Taylor Case, senior writer for the Dynasty Guru, co-host of the podcast Join the Ranks, and lifelong San Diego Padres fan. We'll chat about some of the younger players to make opening day rosters, the usefulness of tools and stats with prospects, and the best way to separate the signal from the noise when it comes to minor league talent. But before we get to all of that, Taylor, how you doing?
Good, guys. Thanks for having me. It's nice to be here. It's always nice to talk baseball.
It's been a long time coming. I know we've been talking for a long time about having you on, so I feel very bad about that. And this is like a nice therapeutic moment. It's a weight off my shoulders that we're finally getting you on. Alexander, how are things in DC?
Doing pretty well today. It's one of those like stop caring about the weather for 1 second, please, sorts of weeks, because it's going to rain through like opening weekend here in DC, and I'm really worried that I don't actually get to see Max Scherzer's first start back in DC, or anyone's. So we'll see.
You might not see his for a different reason.
Yeah.
Wah, wah. Sorry, Debbie Downer early on in the episode. All right, Taylor, again, thank you so much for being here. Talk to us about what you do, where people can find you, all that stuff. And I could tell everybody, but I think everybody would probably rather hear you tell it.
Yeah, I'm a podcaster and writer over at the Dynasty Guru, TDG. I'm doing a couple podcasts right now after Keaton, Shelley, and Jake and Pat and Jordan stepped down. We're doing Dynasty's Child with Kyle and with Sean Lozier. So that's going really well. I'm doing Join the Ranks podcast with Joe, and just writing every once in a while whenever I have time in between holding the kiddos and taking them to school and working and staying alive and stuff. That's pretty much it right now.
How did you come into all of this? The origin stories are always fascinating to me.
You know, it might have even been before, the 2019 season, right before. I think I had emailed the Dynasty Guru because I was looking for like different outlets just to kind of bring some more baseball into my life. Mm-hmm. And I didn't hear back for like 9 or 10 months. I think they had gotten everybody in they needed for ranking season and such. So like maybe even closer to a year. And I finally heard back. It's from Keaton DeRocher when they needed more people again for a new ranking season or the new season to come around before 2020, and sent in my application and was lucky enough to get in. And we've just been kind of building from there. The podcast, like, it was just kind of like a call for podcasting. It was kind of in the like the beginning of the baseball or fantasy baseball like podcasting boom. We kind of sent it out to everybody and was like, hey, does anybody have any ideas? And I said, well, why don't we do like a rankings podcast? We can have other people come on and we can all get on there and debate rankings and such, because that's one of the big things that TDG does is like the top 50, top 100, top 200, and then the top 500s, dynasty rankings. So that one has been really great. That's kind of how I got started. I mean, like, just right place at the right time, and was randomly, it was kind of like that sounds good. Yeah. Have you met Joe? Let's do a podcast. You can do a podcast with Joe. I'd never met Joe. I had no idea who Joe was, but luckily it's gone really well. It's gone really well. And
yeah, it sure has.
Like the TDG crew is just fantastic. Everybody over there is great. So very lucky.
Yeah, it sounds very similar to how we got put together and paired up, and we had Nick Pollock, Captain Pitcherlist himself, on for our 50th episode a few weeks back, and we had to ask him what our origin story was because we didn't really know anything more than, hey, you two should do this podcast and go figure it out. So, it was when they were launching the network, a whole bunch of, let's get some ideas together and we'll pair some people up and see what happens. And here we are, episode 53 for us.
Wow.
Not to make that about us. That really sounds very, very self-centered to ask you a question and then follow up with. Well, now let's talk about me. And speaking of which, Alexander, you look like you'd like to say something.
Well, I'm just saying, this is how every good arranged marriage, you know, turns out. Yeah, if it turns out well, you know, you can't wait to tell other people about it.
So. Yeah, I'm still waiting for my dowry, though, Alexander. We're going to have to get that taken care of.
Yeah, you guys, give me a shipping address. I'll send it for some cattle.
You guys should be proud of this, though. I mean, 50 episodes of this, like, I know because I have now produced and worked on 3 to 4 and guested on a couple more at this point. It's a lot of work. So you guys,
yeah,
be happy, or I'll let you. I mean, if you guys want to talk longer about how awesome this podcast is, go ahead. I'm fine with that. I get it.
Now we're really not toot our own horn kind of people. It just maybe sometimes sounds like it. It is. I think one of the things that people don't realize, and I mentioned this, I forget who we were talking to, but how much of this industry is made up of people who are doing this in their spare time, their extra time. You know, we're recording this at 9 p.m. on a Tuesday. Two of us have little babies, you know, like it, and that's our choice. And I'm not looking for sympathy for that, but I think that lost in the shuffle of a lot of this stuff that goes on is the fact that people are really taking their own time and just how long it takes to make an hour long episode of a podcast. But again, after I said I don't toot my own horn, here I am doing it again. Let's talk about some baseball stuff. We have a segment here called, I know, novel idea, right? Baseball? Alexander's making faces at me for those of you listening. Once again, the visual cues on our audio podcast. We have a segment we call Pass Fail, and I'm stretching it a little bit. This is really going to be more of a buy sell. But we do have a theme to stick with. So it's Pass Fail, buy sell, whatever you want to say. I want to get some immediate reactions from the two of you about some players who are breaking camp with their big league teams. It seems like there's a lot more of that this year. I'm not sure if there's a business of baseball reason or if people are just so onto it. I can't imagine that the clubs are like, well, this is not financially beneficial for us, but everybody knows what we're doing. Like, we haven't for the last whatever number of years, but I want to talk specifically about a few players who are definitely breaking camp with their teams and what you kind of expect, or I guess reactions, takes on this. So the first one, let's talk a little bit about Julio Rodriguez. And I guess what I'm getting at here with this segment is, are we buying or selling that they are going to be the hype that's on them, or are they going to be Kelnick, who's needed some time and is probably going to come into his own, or Adele, who has needed some time and is probably going to come into his own. So is Julio Rodriguez going to come in and be the league leader in a category? Is he going to be this monster, or is he going to need an adjustment period? And what leads you to kind of believe that? So I'll start with you, Taylor. What are your thoughts here on Julio?
Well, I hate to start out in kind of a downer way, but it's evidenced by, you know, just if you look at all my leagues that I have kind of populated on RotoWire, I don't roster any of these guys, partially because you have to take them so early in dynasty mm-hmm. drafts, and even in a lot of redraft leagues as well. And, I'm at a point where I think it's safer. You know, I could joke about, you know, it's safer for my mental health. It's just safer for your safer for your fantasy teams and your dynasty teams, more for your, you know, redraft single league teams, to just not be that. I mean, be hopeful, right? All these guys have plenty of upside. It's so cool. But I do my best to kind of separate the watching baseball part of it and the fantasy baseball part of it. And the reason I don't have them on any of my teams is that it's so hard to expect so much. Like, there's such a difference between even AAA, you know, the highest level in the minors and the major leagues, that, you know, if you're looking at certain projections for somebody like Julio, you know, some of them have him going, you know, hitting low 20s home runs and stealing 20 bags. You got to be happy with half of that. You got to be happy with him hitting 260 and double digit steals and homers you know, and then if he's lucky, cause he's in a nice spot in the lineup, cause he's on a heater or something like that, hits, you know, drives in 150 runs in RBIs. I think you're better off kind of tempering expectations for all these guys. I would think of all the people, you know, guys we're going to talk about here, Julio Rodriguez, Spencer Torkelson, and Josh Lowe. I screwed it up. We talked about it already.
Okay. I do it to myself all the time. I think myself out of it. I have the right answer. I talk myself into the wrong one. No matter what the right answer is, I always talk myself out of it.
Josh Lowe.
It makes for a really great, like, write it down joke where you like write Low and Low LLC, and then just whenever someone else says it out loud, you say no the other way around. It's just Brandon Lau. He's the weird one.
Brandon Lau.
Yeah, Josh, let's do Lowe. That. Let's call him weird for pronouncing his name the way that he's been taught to pronounce his name. That's what we're
yeah.
going.
Yeah, I will.
Come on, Brandon.
So somebody actually tweeted me today about Rodriguez, and that's not why I put him on this rundown. He was already on it. But my response was very much the same. Love him, but really need to temper my expectations for this year. And I went and kind of looked at his projections, and they're really in line with what you're talking about there, Taylor, like a, you know, 260 ish and double digits. And, you know, if you were to take the name away from that and just kind of plug it into where that should go in terms of ADP, I think you're going to see that be a much lower place than where the name is getting him to go. So I think with these players and Alexander, then I want to hear what you have to say too. I think we are talking about range of outcomes here, right? So if you are drafting this player at a certain place, what's more likely, that they're going to hit their ceiling or that they're going to fall to their floor? And I think with young guys, you really have to expect middle to low on that. And then anything else is like gravy or icing, whatever metaphor you'd like to use. Alexander, where are you on Julio Rodriguez?
I think I'm letting myself be really excited because I happen to get him at a really good discount in the one league that I have a share of him. I do want to say that, like, that sort of thing where you didn't have to reach for someone and then everyone else started reaching for him after the fact makes it a whole lot easier to kind of like be excited because, like, you don't have to worry if it doesn't pan out. He was pick 330 for me in like the DC Earth League DARF, which is just insane. That was I did like a dynasty startup draft, but like in redraft, and it's kind of maybe okay because everyone slipped. And like, so I have all of the kids, but like 50 picks below ADP, it felt like. And I feel really good about that for my enjoying baseball side of things, because I think that the coverage we're going to see of a lot of these guys is going to be just endless this year. Baseball needs a storyline like so bad right now. This rough off season. And I'm very happy that it seems like a couple teams are obliging us that. That said, if you're looking to go look at people's age adjusted performances in the minors, like, you're not buying Julio for what he could be. You're also buying the idea that his production will translate. There have been some issues. I know if you're like the sort of person who wants to do Davenport translations or whatever your version of that is, that's maybe more fantasy specific, like AAA pitching was, you saw who was pitching in the major leagues last year. Imagine the guys who were like healthy and just a level below that. That's what AAA hitters were facing. So like whatever is worse than what teams were trotting out there in mid-July. So AAA stats are misleading. Julio was in AA, so you don't have to worry about that stuff being messy. And across that and high A, he managed to hit a total of, I can do math here, 13 home runs. He had 21 steals, and that was in like 340 PAs. So 13 homers in like a half season. Let's call it 40, like a 40%, or not a 40%, more like 80% more. If we're doubling it up to 600, you know, call it fall off. That's the sort of thing where you could see like 20 home runs. It's the sort of thing where you could see 20 to 30 steals if he's got a green light. And the only thing that you have to worry about then is just like, well, what if he doesn't adjust? His profile doesn't look that sort of way. If you're going to like go in like
think about the guys that typically scare you. You know, it's like the aggressive, but it's been working out sort of approaches. So he's the sort of guy where everything's kind of happened the way that I'm going to allow myself to listen to people who want to tell me I should be excited. I will very much be watching though to see if like a 14% walk rate sticks. Like that's probably not going to happen.
Yeah, right, right. But, well, I think again with him, I firmly believe that he will be an excellent Major League Baseball player. I'm just not sure it's going to happen in the first 3 months of this season. So what do you do with that? And that's where I think it becomes tough. How long do you hold? When do you cut? All of that. Taylor, I want to come back to you to talk a little bit more specifically about Spencer Torkelson. Different kind of player, different organization. I'm a little surprised, I guess, that he's breaking camp with the big league club only because it seems like he's the kind of guy that suddenly needs to work on his defense at the beginning of the year and a few weeks into the season is good enough to come up. And I'm very excited about this. I think this is one of those storylines that Alexander was talking about that could really be very, very interesting. So where are you at with Torque?
I love Spencer Torkelson. If I'm being totally honest, I think he's a top, dynasty player. He's a top 50 player. I do a top 500 OBP list, you know, just incredible homer upside. Just, a very solidly built, very solid hitter with encouraging walk to strikeout rates, which is kind of a big thing that I'm paying attention to when I'm looking at these guys before they come up. Again, right now, if we're talking like scale of 1 to 10, if I'm convinced that he's going to be good right away, I'd say Julio is somewhere between a 7 and an 8, and Torkelson's more like 6 to 7, just a notch below that. I think Julio probably has a better spot in the lineup. And Torkelson's probably a little bit on the back third, would be my guess, especially after them trading for who is it? They just got Austin Meadows. So a little bit murky there, right? Guys get hurt. Guys, you know, COVID's still a thing, so COVID is happening as well, and he could move up, but yeah, just a touch, in my opinion, just a touch below Julio as far as immediate impact on your teams. In a couple of years, he could easily be, you know, the same level, in my opinion, around the same level or just below Julio still. Immediate impact, though, is a little bit lower.
Mm.
Do either of y'all, like, watch college baseball, pay attention to college baseball, like, regularly enough to, like, have been aware of what he was doing in college? I feel like I don't, so the fact that I was, like, is surprising. But, like, were y'all aware of what he was doing to... like college baseball in like 2018 and 2019.
I'm talking about like only the really 600, after the fact, the 600 when people OBPs.
Hype in the pick. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. 2020, he did not have that many PAs, 82 PAs before then kind of got shut down. But yeah, he was rocking a 598 OBP that season. Maybe that doesn't stick if the quality of competition catches up. I'm sure the off season or like the early season is not all that strong. But yeah, I mean, he is. Hit 25 homers and then 23 homers in 2 years in college. So when you say homer upside, yeah, it's right there in front of us, like all along. He hit 30 home runs last season across all levels and minors. Like that is a very enticing prospect. But I keep hearing though from people, and like, when people like bring up his name in like sort of redraft context, it's continuously, it's like, is he going to pull the ball enough to like survive Comerica? And that's an interesting thing. It's like the most seasoned and ready college hitting prospect in forever might then face the biggest obstacle left. How big the field is in Detroit. So I do think that as we kind of like grade people, it's very easy to just forget that, like, you know, the realities of where you play and all that are going to matter. So I'm also interested in like where he's been slotting into those Tigers lineups. He hasn't been like gonna hit third or fourth so far from the lineups, right? Remember like Kelnick came up and hit third in his first game. Like that's not apparently gonna happen because they're, you know, doing things like trading for Austin Meadows. Where did that come from?
Yeah.
So I think that for both of them, I think the trends have been like they're not going to be a cleanup hitter this weekend or anything like that, which is a nice like reality check for a lot of us as well. But I gotta say, like, we're talking about some people who are not just toolsy guys that could put it all together later that are fun to think about. Like, the results are there, and I think that's a big driving part of this, though, right? Like, I want to like kind of flip this into like a broader conversation because I'm curious. Then, Taylor, like, how much of what you care about tends to be like results driven versus look at these things a guy is capable of in 2 years based off of physical tools? Like, do you? Like, which camp of those do you find yourself agreeing with or caring about more?
If I had to pick, it would have to be results, because tools are great, right? I'm not a scout though. Like, I don't have eyes on most of these people, right? I have to rely on other reports. Specifically, Prospects Live does really great work, and I read a lot of their stuff. Like, tools don't win you your leagues. Tools don't hit home runs. You know what I mean? So the stat, you know, your fan graphs or your baseball reference, your stat line, that's obviously, you know, going to be more important to me in certain contexts, right? Like, certain, you know, context is everything when they're called up and when they're playing down in the minor leagues as well, right? Like, certain things like the weird stolen base rules or pickoff rules down in the lower minors this year, right? So you got to take that with a grain of salt. But yeah, if I had to pick one, yeah, it would be results. And we actually chatted about this a little earlier before you had even come on. Like, I don't even, like, the reason I don't draft all these guys either is that I'm much more comfortable, at least in a dynasty setting, picking guys who have stat lines, you know, a large, you know, sample size of major league stat lines to pull from. Mm-hmm. And then speculating on other later guys later in the draft, like away from the Julio Spencers, Lowe's, even Abrams, like big, you know, hit tool guys that I really like and that could build some muscle and build into some power, you know. And I think it's important to go after those guys, but, you know, I'm much more fond of or likely to go after somebody like a Felix Valerio or a Joey Weimer or somebody like that you can draft in, you know, 20 rounds beyond where you have to draft these other guys. Because, like I said, the homers or the theoretical tools, right? While I trust these reports, you know, especially from, you know, certain, like, you know, people like Ken Balderson and other prospect guys at TDG, they do great work. That's just, you know, it's not there. Those guys aren't, you know, we don't play minor league fantasy baseball, and it's not a knock on any of these guys, but we don't, you know, it's, you know, I root from these guys from afar, you know? Yeah. Yeah. Right. And I'm glad we don't do that. Right. Because, you know, we shouldn't be I don't know. There's something weird about not betting, but like kind of playing around with, you know, I mean, a lot of them are kids,
right?
So that's a little weird. But no, I'm much more likely to draft somebody like Andrew McCutchen, to be honest, than any of these guys we've already named, right? A guy who has 12 years of stat lines to pull from, 12 years of baseline to pull from, even though the upside might be so much higher from some of these guys, right? In 5 years, McCutchen may not be playing, and Julio could be the best player in baseball. I've talked about this just on a pod last week. I'm a boring fantasy player. I don't speculate like that.
Well, I think that goes back to what I was talking about before with range of outcomes. If you have a smaller range of outcome, you know what you're betting on more so, and you can value that more appropriately. So I can decide where McCutchen makes sense for me to draft him because I have a much better sense of what I'm going to be getting from him at this stage. You know, like you said, there's a lot of data there. So Alexander jumped the gun a little bit and kind of pushed us into what is our numbers of the week segment, which is really just talking about what do we use to try and understand the kids before they come up. Whether you're necessarily drafting them certainly you're looking at them and understanding them. And we know that minor league data is certainly less publicly available than major league data. And so there's a lot more of that kind of gut feel, or the reading the scouting reports, or looking at the tools. You're saying that you definitely rely more on that performance than necessarily the tool. But as these guys come up, so as Julio Rodriguez is getting major league at bats and we're getting major league data on him, what are the first places you're going to go on his FanGraphs page a few weeks in, a month in, halfway through the season, to see if it lines up with what he's supposed to be?
It's pretty simple for me. It's walk to strikeout rates. So BBK, you know, BB over mm-hmm. K, is it, you know, is a walk rate, you know, even, you know, somewhere in the 7 to 10 range. That's fantastic. You know, somebody to have that kind of eye right away in the major leagues. It's tough to do. Even, you know, seasoned veterans, you know, find it hard to take walks sometimes. You know, there's a certain amount of patience, and we can all imagine a certain kind of like energy and enthusiasm that must come along with being a major leaguer. I'm much more impressed by a guy who is called upon and then can still manage to be, even if it's a shadow or like a faint shadow, like still kind of hold on to the same kind of stat line profile that they had in the minor leagues. If all of a sudden strikeouts are up, you know, or if you're watching them and they're swinging out of their butts, you know, you like that's not good, right? And it's not their fault, right? It's not like, and it's not a, like a true indictment of anybody. It doesn't mean it's going to last, but, guys come up and they push, you know, they want to be, mm-hmm. you know, everybody wants to be Tatis, and take the league by storm, right? And so it wouldn't surprise me if these guys come up and are like that, especially two teams like the Tigers. You got, like, again, team context, right? Like the Tigers and the Mariners, who are kind of, who are starting to like lift off a little bit out of the mud. You know, everybody wants to be that guy to kind of put the team on their back and carry them to, you know, carry them to glory, right? It's not easy to do though. So, but if a guy can remain patient, you know, can hit some bombs, if Julio can steal some bases, and that to me is, you know, if I had to lump it into one small thing, that's going to be the biggest thing for me.
All right, Alexander, I'm going to tie together the last player that we didn't talk about in our pass fail buy sell segment with this numbers of the week, and tell me what you're going to be looking for from Josh Lowe in the first month of the season. As we're getting information, what is it that you're going to be looking for to try and gauge if he's successful, whether it's sustainable, or if he's struggling, whether there's some sort of flaw, or if it's just the way things are?
I think I'll probably say every week for the rest of the season that, you know, choices are sticky. I'm really going to be interested to see over the first month how much things like swing rates are going to wobble around for him and a lot of other people. Lau, more so than the other guys we talked about, does have a little bit of strikeout risk. And I think that puts him, especially on a Rays team where there's a lot of people who are pretty good defenders, at risk of like some platoon issues. And I think for people like for our like immediate case, I think we have to care a little bit about like, is he putting it all together well enough to play enough that we should care about him? Because I think he's going to be good. It just might take some more adjustment to find that balance of strikeout versus all of the other good stuff we're hoping for. Strikeout rates become pretty normal, pretty quick on average. They do wobble pretty wildly though for a lot of people who are debut. I think Andrew Vaughn was sporting like a high 20s strikeout rate for his first minute in the big leagues, and then kind of just settled in and had like suddenly a 15% strikeout rate for like the second half of the season. Kelnick last year had his swing rates wobble all over the place and his strikeout rates go all over the place. These are because of choices as much as they are because of skills. And when you talk about like people's headspace, that's definitely part of it. So I'm very curious to see how many of those things are relatively stable. And that's kind of like a I just want to do that before I look at anything else, just know I can trust the numbers are like still relevant and applicable. Beyond that, you know, it's like same thing. I'm going to care about, is the strikeout rate good? Is the walkout rate? Is the walk rate good? Walkout rate.
Yeah.
And then I'm going to look at hard contact rate because that's what I do. But like kind of in that order, I'm not going to care about barrels. I will pay attention to the weird things like sweet spot and line drive rate and all that, mostly just to know how much noise I have to care about. But yeah, like, please don't think that someone's like going to be a dude, you know, like in the best way, because he has like some really good luck just knocking the ball over the second baseman's head and like is suddenly sporting a 350 batting average after 2 weeks.
Or a 33% line drive rate. We know how you feel about that.
Yeah. But like, when you can visualize it that way, like, it's, I think it's really important to put like a sight in your mind to like why someone isn't as good maybe as you think they are. If people could just do that every time, they would. They can't, and they don't. Right. So, yeah, I am less into Low as like a prospect than I think a lot of people are. His ranks are like all over the place, relatively speaking. Some people are like, yes, this dude's gonna rock, and some people are like, hey, defense is part of the reason he's valuable and you shouldn't be freaking out and spending all of your fab money. So I don't have any shares of him, and I think that's mostly just Ray's fears, I'll be honest, but I'm very curious and I'd love to be wrong.
I want to hear more about your walk to out ratio that you're creating here on the fly. That's going to take the industry by storm. We are
walk
going
to out
to...
ratio. I should note that's BB per nine. Right. That does exist.
There we go. I still want the t-shirt that has your face on it. It's the walk out rate. We are going to get into the crux of the episode, which is trying to separate signal from noise as it pertains to Dynasty. And you know, one of the things that we mentioned before we started recording is that a lot of Dynasty coverage is so focused on these young players. But when you play in Dynasty leagues, you roster the McCutcheons of the world as well. So talking about signal and noise and all of that. But before we get to it, we're going to take a very small break.
Hey, Alex Fast here, and thanks for listening to this podcast on the Pitcher List Podcast Network. If you're a fan, consider supporting all of us by getting a PL Plus subscription, where you're going to get an ad-free website and get access to our Discord, where you can talk to all of our podcast hosts and staff. Plus, you can hang out with our incredible Pitcher List community. It's basically a baseball sanctuary year-round for as low as $8 a month. You can sign up at pitcherlist.com/plus, and you're going to get your first month free with promo code podcast. Also, don't forget to check out everything else we do as well, from YouTube videos, live streams, newsletters, off-season articles, TikToks, breakdowns, over 15 baseball podcasts on our network. We can't stop talking about baseball, even during the off-season. So sign up for PL Plus today at pitcherlist.com/plus and use promo code podcast to get your first month free. All right, thanks for listening. Let's get back to the show.
And we're back. So, Taylor, here we go. Dynasty leagues. First of all, I want to ask this. You said that you had gotten into doing all of this the season prior to COVID. Do I have my timeline correct there? Or was the short season your first season?
I think my first season with TDG was the shortened season. So that was kind of a buzzkill, but hey, what are you going to do?
Right. All of us, right? Nothing any of us could do.
that was my first year with Pitcher List. And it's funny, like I put out some pieces in like early March and I was doing some spring training coverage.
Yeah.
Just so fun how much all that helped out.
Yeah.
Well, my question, I guess, is a little blown out of the water then, but I'm still going to ask it because I'm sure there's an angle here. But like, what has it been like to try and be somebody who's learning about and reporting on minor league players over these last couple of seasons where the minor leagues have been kind of weird? Do you anticipate this year being easier, better? Was last year, obviously, in 2020, they weren't playing games, right? So there wasn't that much coming out. Like, how much of an impact did these COVID years have on trying to understand and be informed about this stuff that matters to all of us dynasty players?
Jeez, how did it? I mean, it impacted everything. I mean, you had to, and I'm not a guy that, like, I don't have sources, you know, like I said, I'm not a scout, you know, I don't have eyes on the alternate camps.
Right.
You know, I have a particular style of playing dynasty baseball and redraft leagues, like I've said, that I'm not really like necessarily needing that kind of info all the time. You know, I rely heavily on other sources for it when I can get it. How did it, I mean, but yeah, the only answer there is that it affected everything. It was brutal. I mean, and we got to try to remember too, you know, that everybody is still going through this, especially minor leaguers,
right,
who we've learned a lot about in the last couple of years, as fans. Or I would imagine a lot of people have learned a lot more about, are struggling with other things aside from COVID and not having games. But, you know, like, you know, getting paid and having a place, having places to live and stuff like that. So it was tough. And because, you know, a lot of the content we do, you know, or a lot of the writers at TDG are, you know, using their eyes to, you know, or like MIL, you know, minor league TV and stuff like that. And I was able last year, and this year I'll do the same. I'll be able to watch a ton of games, and I go up to, you know, I'm going to be able to go up to some Storm games up in Lake Elsinore, which is great. That's the best you can do if you can ever find your way to, you know, I can't encourage every listener enough. If you can go and support minor league baseball, you know, even if you just like going watch games, but if you like to go and, you know, like do your own little, you know, armchair scouting as a dynasty mm-hmm. player or a fantasy player, go get your eyes on somebody, but yes, support it, because, you know, as MLB has shown, they can remove things, or things can shut down or can be shut down with impunity in any moment. So yeah, it was brutal to not have any games to pull from, not have any stat lines to pull from. And I say that, you know, lightly, because it was much worse for everybody that was involved. All the teams, everybody that, you know, didn't acquire any of that revenue from games and such, and, you know, nearby business and stuff, and the actual players. It's just, it sucked.
Yeah, bad all around for sure. Alexander, when you are deciding what round is the appropriate round to pull the trigger on these kids, you were talking about your Earth draft there. You wound up with a lot of them because they fell. What information are you using to decide what is an appropriate time and place to pull the trigger?
So I think one of the important things I should say in that is that I'm kind of just basing it all off of the crowd and then a little bit more doubt in some of these cases. For example,
what does algorithm look like? Crowd plus doubt equals Alexander.
ADP plus 25.
Yeah.
I'm like half kidding. But like, what better can you do in some of these cases? Like, the amount of information that we have on some of these kids who have really, like, let's say, exploded on the alt site, came up in like high A and then double A. We've got a season for some of these people of like data on them. And, you know, like, especially if they've made some like really serious changes, we don't know necessarily what the before and after is. Like, we don't have as clear a picture of how well these people can adapt to like having a hard time. We haven't witnessed some of these players struggle yet. And I think that's one of the things that typically tends to breed confidence, watching someone struggle at a level, make a swing change, make an approach change, and get better on the fly really makes, I think, a lot of the scouting people, like not just like dynasty ranker people, but like Trevor Huth, but like, we're not making fun of him for being our favorite guy to make fun of. I love you, Trevor. I hope you're listening to this. You know, like people who are out there and doing the work and saying like, look at this beautiful swing. It's really, really simple and repeatable stuff that I can't do. They don't have all this information, but like, I have to trust them, right? So we're kind of flying blind in these interesting ways. Like, for example, I was definitely willing to pick Julio Rodriguez in the 300s of ADP because, well, in that case, the alternative is mostly people who are just a little bit better than average. if right. you drop him, who cares? The thing that can be scary is often more like you're playing that 10 or 12 team, not that crazy deep sort of situation where rostering and playing someone who's not that good, like, really actively hurts you because the replacement level is so high. I think in those ones, it's kind of just me getting caught up in the moment a lot whenever I do end up picking a lot of guys that I, you know, maybe have some doubts will be that much more valuable than, for example, like Tommy Pham. Like, Tommy Pham could go 2020 this year. He is not a threat to be drafted within the first 3 to 5 rounds like Bobby Witt Jr. and Julio Rodriguez are. Like, he could put up an identical stat line to them this year, like, very easily. And, like, I think the reality is I'm going to grab Pham in every league. I have, like, people like Alex Wood in every league for a reason. They're boring enough to be on my team and be happy about it. So I think the lack that it's not technical, that we don't know things, is probably the first thing we have to acknowledge here. I think we're all on the same page. I just happen to trust the computers quite a bit. And that means I don't trust the bad X because for prospects in particular, because it doesn't have the data it wants. But Steamer tends to be pretty okay. Davenport translations tend to give a pretty clear picture. The computers are smarter than we are.
All right, Taylor, I'm going to put this last question to you in theory, and then we're going to talk about some actual players in terms of dynasty and not just the kids. But is understanding prospects more of a science or is it more of an art?
Well, it's going to be, I don't know how to answer that. there's your answer to that. It's both, right? Just like with, you know, any prediction you make or any sort of analysis you make, I think in fantasy baseball, for me, I joked about this when we did a bold prediction article the other day, but it's actually kind of true all the time. Like, I'm like 60% stats, like 30%, like the mood I'm in, or like where's my mental health at, and 10%, like just because I've got like a gut feeling about something, you know. I don't know. Like some guys that are super good, like obviously the guys that are in the top 10 prospects, right? Those guys are heavily scouted, and in general, I would think you can, you know, you can generally rely on them to be average to above average to elite players, right? But further down, for me at least, right? You know, this is something I'd like to get better at kind of my scouting, you know, combined, you know, like feel mm-hmm. versus stats versus everything else, context, because that keeps getting brought up. But I don't know, that it's tough and it's different because there are 100 different factors with each player, and COVID and just kind of the state of baseball and people being brought up and sent down and new situations and a lot of trades and like there's just been like a flurry of activity. All of a sudden, again, it's really very hard to know. It's very hard to know. So it's going to be a healthy mix of both, you know. And I imagine it'll stay that way.
I feel like the answer most people in the industry would give for the major league guys is much healthier helping of science with the numbers and the maths and all of those things. And I feel as though the less the smaller the sample size you have at the major league level, the more that art really does creep in. But I'm not doing this work, so I certainly didn't want to. I didn't want to lead you to a conclusion or an answer. But I think it's fair to say that's a really hard question, and here's why it's hard. And that's kind of underscores the work that's being done and how challenging it is to put together a top 500 list of dynasty ranks. And there are a number of places that do it and probably struggle in the same ways to try and what's the difference between player 400 and player 450? And for that matter, what's the difference between player 330 and 500? You know, the nuance there feels like 150 picks, but it's not the same between 1 and 150. So I think it's a totally fair answer.
Well, that's where I think a lot of, like, when you're doing a list like that, you know, because when TDG, you know, pumps out a lot of those, and I'm strongly of the opinion that really with the whole list, but especially with you know, like picks 100 through 500, like there's an art to that. There's a feel to yeah. it, because like if you want a top 500 list that's just stats and science, like you can just check the projections for that. You know what I mean?
Right.
Like you don't need me, you know, but I feel like I've done a pretty good job of winning my leagues over the last, you know, half dozen years, and bring a certain feel to it. And this is not to just, you know, defend my list, but I think in that aspect, you know, or in that regard, you know, there is a little bit of feel to it. And that provides good, healthy discussion as well, right? Like if we all just right. went off the numbers, then there would be no discussion and no podcasts, and it wouldn't be any fun.
That's right. All right. Let's talk about some guys. And you kind of have some that you've populated in here. If you've been inspired to go off the list that we have on our rundown that you put in there, you're welcome to do so. But especially in the context of Dynasty, because the value for this year is not the only factor, right? And how much do you put into the value of some of these guys based on how long they might be in the league, what they might be worth in 3 years or 4 years or 5 years? Does year four matter as much as year five or as much as year two? Or do you really just want to look at what's the best team I can put together for this year? And then kind of like Alexander's algorithm before, instead of minus or plus for, you know, where they're going ADP, age becomes kind of the tiebreaker, or, you know, it bumps things 10% this way, 15% that way. So go ahead, pick a guy and talk about the kind of what is different about that guy in terms of just a redraft league versus a dynasty situation.
Well, I'm going to start with Trent Grisham, because I've been a big Trent Grisham guy ever since actually he came over to the Padres, and obviously I get to watch him more. That's my team. That's my local team, my Bally Sports Padres team. So in that same bold prediction article, I think, or I made the prediction that I believe it was that he goes 30-20 this year, that he kind of finds the sauce that he had in 2020 and really gets after it. My reasons for that there are a few of them, right? So from 2020 to 2021, there are a couple fluctuations, except mostly in the right direction, in my opinion. Like his average came down, BABIP came down a little bit with it. You know, in 2020, he had 10 homers and 10 steals, which put him on an incredible pace, right? I think year before, in between lower level or like double A, triple A, and the majors, I think it was 2019. When he came up with for the Brewers, I think he had over 30 home runs that year. So, and last year he did really well as well. It's 15-13 with a 10% walk rate. He actually lowered his strikeout rate as well. I think the problem where he kind of went off the rails is kind of the same for the entire Padres team, which could be the case, which could happen again this year. I'm fully ready to admit that could happen again this year, but it's playing time. And there was kind of a weird vibe about this team after the trade deadline, when there was that weird scramble, and they thought they were going to get Trey Turner and Scherzer, and then they were going to make this trade, and the Dodgers got him, and they were going to make that other trade, and the guy went somewhere else. That team stunk after that. And I think, you know, watching them play, right, and I think you can learn a lot from actually sitting down, you know, I haven't watched a whole lot of spring training. I wish I'd been able to watch more spring training, but like in actual major league games, if you're sitting down and watching body language, the way guys are walking up to the plate, the way they're taking pitches, it sucked. Like the whole vibe on that team was bad, and he didn't play as much, and he got pushed down the lineup. That is not that at least to start the first couple months, that's not going to be the case for Trent Grisham. For me, he seems to be, I mean, I think he's a locked-in leadoff hitter. Tatis is hurt for a couple months. He can get on base, right? If he's leading off, getting on base, the opportunity for steals are there. He's fast enough to steal. He's crafty enough to do it. he's probably my biggest, you know, if we're gonna plant flags anywhere, he's the guy I have on 8 teams, over half of my teams. So if it doesn't work out, then that one's gonna hurt, right? My redraft leagues, right? You could have drafted him, you know, a couple months ago, very late in the 200s or so, you know, because people were reacting to how, you know, poorly, I say quote unquote poorly, you know, last season went, because it actually was still pretty good. But yeah, he's probably my biggest one for this year. I'm riding. He's my ride or die this year.
I'm going to try to shake your confidence here, and I don't want you to take it personally.
Please come on our podcast so that we can, you know, be unkind to your takes.
No. Joe does this to me all the time on the other podcast. No worries.
Cool. Okay. It's all with a good heart.
I really actually do want to believe in Grisham, and I like a lot of the things in his profile in terms of the floor of what he is. I really like guys who can walk 10% of the time, and he sure will. Strikeout rate dipped a little bit last year down from like you said, 25, 26 down to 22.6, I guess, like 23. So it went down a little bit. The hard contact did not follow in that same direction. He lost a little bit of his like really great 2020 season. And the thing in particular I wanted to pay attention to that concerned me is in 2020, his sweet spot rate was like 5% above the league average. And okay, that doesn't stick. And it didn't stick. And he came back to about normal. A thing that I watch, it doesn't always work out this way, but it is something I pay attention to. If someone's doing better than we would anticipate in terms of squaring the ball up, line drives, sweet spot contact, etc., they typically end up with a slightly higher number of hard hit balls as a result, because they're just squaring up more pitches than you'd expect, right? Mm-hmm. They get a little bit more behind a few more of them. So I don't know if that's one thing to care about or there, but you know, you see how like the actual versus expected results each year have kind of like wobbled. I worry that he had one small sample of like a hot streak, he's fallen back to earth. And the thing that actually makes me think I can believe that he wouldn't be this good is that some of the kind of like, we're trying it out, trying to figure out if we can like measure bat speed, mm-hmm, has him as like a bottom 10th percentile in bat speed sort of
really
guy. And there's some people who survive that way. Jose Altuve does, for example.
Interesting.
But the bottom chunk in bat speed is just a place where hopes have gone to die for people who are fast. I don't
not
know
to
a whole
be
lot
too
about
downer about it or anything.
Yeah. Let me just say,
hyperbole
Rockies,
aside,
fast, bad, it's down there. So I'm really interested to see if Grisham can like continue his ability to like pull his harder hit stuff. He had a good number of pulled home runs and some pulled doubles that could have been home runs as well. So I want to think that his floor is very high and we saw it. And I think that's like the thing that you've kind of pointed out, is he was pretty good and he can be better. I just want to say like, those are some things I've seen that I'm interested to watch this year. Maybe some of his lingering issues with injuries might have been the reason the bat speed was down. Maybe it isn't.
Right.
We'll see.
Yep. Well, that's there. You know, you can't take away the injuries, right? It could happen again too. So there's that. Right. That's good to know. That's interesting.
I will say that I am very jealous of you Padres fans that you got my boy Orsillo out there calling games. You got one of the best booths in baseball.
Man. He's a. I'm not allowed to cuss on this podcast. He's a gosh darn delight, is what I'm going to say about Don Orsillo.
Losing him from Boston was devastating. Really, really devastating.
I've heard
it's
that.
It's not often that you get that attached, I guess. There's a handful of guys, right, throughout history that people have gotten really attached to in their booths, but I cannot believe they let him go. I'm very, very bitter about that.
Him and Mark Grant, him and Mud Cat are just, they're like San Diego treasures, man. I mean,
it's amazing.
I'm 100% biased.
Yeah.
But I don't think I'm the only one who thinks that like they are the cream of the crop. They are the best at like making a baseball game relatable to anybody who's sitting there watching on their couch. They're so good at it.
And they're not, I mean, from the what I've heard of the Padres broadcast, it's very similar, I think, to the relationship that Orsillo had with Jerry Remy, who we just lost. In terms of, like, there would be times in the game where they weren't really talking about the game, but it was better for it. You know, I just saw a clip where at some point Grant was that's his name, right?
Mark Grant
was like grabbing a churro in the middle of a spring training game. You know, like, just cool stuff like that, because it's human, it's relatable. Like, you get up and go get a snack in the middle of the game, and it's not all just this buttoned up, very corporate kind of way of making baseball interesting. Anyway, so that's a huge tangent, but enjoy him. Because you never know when your organization's going to make a bad choice and let him go somewhere else.
Yeah, I feel bad for you Red Sox fans, man. That's tough.
Let's switch gears here and talk about a pitcher. So you've got a couple here to pick from. Who would you prefer to talk about?
That doesn't matter to me. Like, another two guys I had tweeted out earlier today, a couple guys, and I think a lot of them have a theme, at least the starters. Let's go Tyler Molly and Marcus Stroman are two guys that I have rostered in, I would say, you know, 30 to 40% of my leagues. And really a big thing for me when I'm drafting in small leagues and points leagues and roto categories, whatever kind of leagues, is inning thresholds. And those are two guys that have shown that they can really hit, you know, 160, 170. You know, if we're lucky, we get 180 out of Stroman. You know, not as many strikeouts as other pitchers, right? But kind of crafty ground ball guy. And I'm getting this mixed up in my head. I can't remember what the Cubs defense is like now. So that's a little worrisome to me that I can't remember.
I don't know that we know is actually the answer.
Yeah. But that's kind of a baseline I use for a lot of my leagues, getting big innings guys, right? And then doing my best with high impact, low whip strikeout guys, on the back end of my roster and kind of churning those guys in and out. And I've had relative success with that. So, I mean, those guys, I mean, Molly's exciting. Yeah, to me, he's exciting, you know, stuff plus innings, you know, not a great park, but, you know, has shown to just be an excellent pitcher in my mind. Stroman's in my mind, he's a little bit more boring, not a strikeout guy, but finds creative ways to get outs, I guess, is probably the way.
And he's not a Met anymore.
That's
huge right there, right?
I don't hate it. I don't hate that.
Yeah. I feel like I often end up in this weird place where I talk about, you know, like, things like baseball savant. I will not say that they are the problem here, because I actually don't think they are in this case. And how they kind of have melted our conception of who's good and who isn't by making us look at a couple of, like, really big numbers and not, like, thinking about how they actually play out. And I think that when you talk about Stroman's strikeout rate, it's worth kind of pivoting that fantasy-wise to think about how, like, that can, like, mislead us. Six innings of Marcus Stroman versus five innings of someone else will make that gap in strikeout rate that he and insert your hypothetical less boring person here, right, like, play out differently. If we're talking about him striking out 20% of the batters he faces 25% more batters, that balances out.
Right.
And I think it's really easy to lose sight of that. This also makes me think about a really ridiculous thing that I saw on Twitter this morning, which is that someone was, like, in a NFBC league of some sort where someone had to, like, drafted Hoskins, you know, as their SP1 and basically, like two or three starters. And they're like, what's the bare minimum number of starters I can roll out in this actual roto league? Can I punt starting pitcher? And I definitely was thinking about how you'd have to have gotten someone like Stroman to make that possible. I tweeted out, like, I'd done some scratch work to figure out, like,
how many innings you would need three starters to average in order to make that work, or what your starter reliever mix would need to be if it's 180 versus 60 because you're getting two start weeks. It is really funny to think about like volume that way, because I never think about volume, actually. I just think about the per game production, because I just always assume I can go find volume again. But that's a better way, I think, when you point out like they're going to pitch a lot when they pitch. Rather, and you like they're going to do that a lot also, like that yeah. stacks up a whole lot. So I have no shares of Stroman, and I never do because he's just not my guy. But like when you have Stroman and you have Molly, what's the opposite guy that you're filling in at the back end of your roster? So like, give me a hypothetical name there.
Like the Loaizagas, the Chad Greens. Okay. You know, I've been kind of on other pods as well. And this one, I'll admit, it could easily backfire on me. I'm kind of on the Pierce Johnson is good.
hey, like I think
tour
so.
Right now, like high strikeout, high leverage relief guys, you know, those are the guys I fill the back half in if I'm in a roto league, right? Like the 12 strikeouts per nine, you know, 12. Yeah, exactly. Right. Pierce Johnson in TGFBI, and I didn't drop him because, like,
I think I have five of him essentially in TGFBI.
Nice. Like, okay. So I've got to
at least for the first week and change. Starters aren't going to be reliable. Yeah. No one's going to be pitching at a full load. We don't know who's going to have all these different roles. Mm-hmm. It doesn't have to be Colin McHugh, but I want Colin McHugh to kind of like steal a bit from Adam Howe and Kevin Hastings. I think they're spot on with McHugh's not going to close there, but like I definitely want every opportunity I can for people who I trust stuff wise, who I think could vulture a save. I don't even think McHugh will vulture a save, but like Pierce Johnson, absolutely, I want on my rosters.
Oh yeah,
what else is going to like? How much can they hurt you? How much can they help you? I think that's just a good strategy. But like, I want to ask then, if you're playing a lot of like dynasty-ish leagues, how many leagues are you playing where people like them can be of big use to you versus like TGFBI? We're worried about that sort of stuff. Like, are you going out and fishing up as many Pierce Johnsons as you can in some of these dynasty leagues as well?
Oh yeah. Yeah. I have him on three or four teams. Mostly dynasty, because I'm also in some saves plus holds leagues where he, mm-hmm. you know, his yeah. value is propped up because of that, because he's going to get 30 plus, you know, almost guaranteed, I would say, in a saves plus holds league. In a saves, it's a little bit more murky because Robert Suarez is there, and they have other guys that can say, you know, Lamet could be a closer. Who knows, right? You know,
right.
I can only hope that. You know, I have Suarez on a couple of teams too. I can only hope that Bob Melvin can like pick a guy, and I've heard that he likes to pick a guy and stick with him. So mm-hmm. I think Johnson has the stuff to do that, you know, to be a 30 saves guy. But if not, and he stays healthy, he's a 30 holds guy. So I have him, you know, this is extremely I've been all offseason been speculating on Pierce Johnson, just kind of holding him on the back end. And if it in the first couple of weeks, if it doesn't work, if he's, you know, if he's walking guys all of a sudden, or if he's, you know, he just has a couple holes and his role changes, because who knows the landscape, like who knows what pitching is going to be like this year. If it changes, then yeah, I mean, most drafts you're in, Pierce Johnson is not drafted in, and I'm the only bozo who's drafting Pierce Johnson. So yeah, you don't feel that bad about it.
Well, a couple points about this strategy. Number one, getting innings and volume matters. It just does. We've all accepted it on the offensive side that we want to maximize plate appearances, right? Innings matter because, to Alex's point, the more innings there are, the more batters you're going to face, the more opportunities you have to do things. Your rates don't necessarily have to be as good as somebody who's pitching 140 innings to actually net more of those counting stats. And getting somebody later who's got that volume is really impactful and super helpful. On the other side, even if those guys are your save plus hold kind of guy is there, if you don't have holds, you can still sneak some wins from those guys.
Oh yeah.
Because they're being used in non-save situations. To go back to Stroman, somebody like that is more likely to be getting you quality starts. I think the quality start is going to be, it was kind of the solution to win stink. And now there's not enough pitchers throwing six innings on the regular to be able to use that as a replacement stat. So, I actually have a league that's a win or quality start.
Mm-hmm.
So
I like that.
You get one.
That's cool.
You don't get two if it's both a win and a quality start. You get one, but you get the chance to get either. So
A
guy who has a tremendous outing and goes five innings, you're not bummed because you're in a quality starts league.
Sure.
Or a guy that goes out and gives up four runs in six innings, but his team wins. You still get the win. I think it's a balance there. It's a nice way of doing it. But if you're not in those leagues and you need the quality starts because that's where your particular league went as a way to get away from wins, all the more reason to make sure you're getting those guys who are going to average the number of innings it takes to get a quality start. So. Anyway, just a little, those are the ideas bouncing around in my head as the both of you were talking there. Let's talk a little bit about Tristan. Somebody help me with the way. I should know, right? I'm the Red Sox fan. Is it Casas? I've heard it so many different ways.
I'll believe you.
It's
Casas,
it's,
sounds right.
Don't believe me. I think it is, but I've heard it multiple ways. But this is interesting because of a lot of reasons. So the dynasty element, obviously he's younger. But this is also like, is there opportunity? What is his upside? What's his floor? All of that. So talk to me a little bit about him.
I want to talk actually about a scouting report I heard from him a while ago before we talk about the more recent stuff, because he's actually one of my favorite players to like cite as an example without actually citing him as an example. Trevor Huth, a person that I did not make fun of earlier in this podcast, made a
it
very
almost
smart
seems like he slipped you a 10 to say his name as many times as possible on this pod.
This is, by the way, our third prospects live plug essentially in this podcast. Indirectly. It's like, there's our scouts. Kidding. Huth, obviously friend of the pod, friend of all people who like good content, is actually good at identifying people who are good. And one of the things I liked about his early analysis is Casas, he brought up this really important thing that he does, which is like more than a lot of other people, he is really effective in his two strike approach. His ability to choke up and not lose results while changing the way he hits has been kind of a calling card of his success in the past couple of years. And I always like to bring that up whenever I want to say people make choices. Two strikes aren't the same as otherwise. Things matter like that, et cetera, et cetera. Like, you can choose to be the hitter you are. And when you just hack at it for all three strikes available to you, Heston Kira to a degree, bad things can happen. While also making you look really good in things like barrel rate.
Did you say Heston Kira, by the way? I think you did. It's okay.
I'm going to ignore that because...
We're just going to move right along.
Yep, we are. So I'm really excited about Casas.
Like his alter ego, the one that can actually hit in the major league level.
Heston Kira, please break out this year. So I'm really excited about him as like that sort of thing, especially as a foil potentially to Dahlbeck, who's not that sort of hitter. So I think that was one of like the real eye-opening, this is the difference between a 40 grade guy with a bunch of raw power and someone who can be a really exciting difference maker. We'll see if it all comes together. We'll see if it all holds. But I'm really intrigued by the things that I am hearing about him from people who do scouting.
Me too.
What's your take?
I don't have much to add to that. Aside from the fact that I actually, like I was talking, I don't have a lot of those high-end, highly scouted, highly touted prospects on my teams. I have Casas in a couple places, and I can't think of, I honestly can't think of anybody I would trade him away for. He's... Like, I actually think he could be, above average or an elite major league player. I think he's just got approach wise, like you mentioned, it's advanced. It's going to be very exciting when he comes up. I actually, when he comes up, he's going to be somebody that I go, that I run to the waiver wire and pick up. And I don't always do that with guys that are called up, but he's going to be one of them.
Well, that's exciting news for me as a Sox fan. They could certainly use somebody like that.
Yeah, I believe in his year one potential, definitely more so than some other guys as a result of some of the things I've seen and heard.
See, that now that brings us full circle, right? So when we were talking at the top about people like Julio Rodriguez and Spencer Torkelson, and even Kelnick and Kirilloff, who came up and didn't light the world on fire and didn't meet expectations and still very well could have really successful major league careers, it sounds to me that like the difference is the approach and the ability to kind of adapt to the situation is giving you more confidence in Casas being able to come up and succeed and where they failed. Am I hearing that right?
Yeah, I think that making good choices is very difficult. There were a lot of guys, I think, in the past few years we've seen like do a thing that gets a big number, but doesn't necessarily mean they're doing the right thing. You know, Kevin Biggio's walk rate coming with definitely a big strikeout rate at the same time. You pick your number to paint the picture you want is definitely part of the experience there. I think that you have to learn from those sorts of things. So Casas being like a making good choices, not just like, you know, it's hard to measure those things. People like to try to do things like here's how often he swings in and out of the zone. By that number, he has to be really good. No, it's like here is a the numbers are going to be wrong a little bit because you can't just average everything together for him. I'm really curious to see how well he performs. Also, selfishly, very curious to see what things like hard hit rate look like for him, where it's just like it doesn't paint the full picture because he's not always that one same person. So, yeah, I'm really interested in him as a case study and as a person to potentially roster.
Sounds good. Well, that is going to bring us to the end of this episode of Dugout Study Hall. Taylor, thank you so much for jumping on. Once again, I apologize that it took us so long to connect, but well worth it, at least on my side. I don't know if it was worth it for you to wait this long to come on our pod, but for us, it was worth the wait to have you come on.
Nothing to apologize
for. If you could just remind everybody where they can find you and the Twitter handles for all the different things that you got going on.
Yeah, I'm on Twitter at TCasesLoaded. I am hosting at Dynasty's Child and at Join the Ranks TDG. And nothing to apologize for, man. I'm super happy to be here. It's nice to see a cat in the background there. Alex, this was great. I really appreciate it. Timing is whatever. Scheduling is impossible right now. So. It's all good. And we got to get you, I'll get you guys on the pod as well. That'll be our next order of business. If you're interested, you guys do any rankings?
I don't necessarily like doing it because it's stressful, but I love talking about it.
All right. Then you're the perfect. No, that's perfect. Cause then you can come on and just like see ours and challenge all of our stuff on there. That's perfect.
Yeah. I don't do them. I looked at trying to just do like a redraft ranking at the beginning of the season. I just ran out of time to try and dig into the process and everything. So I don't have ranks either. And I'm better suited for asking questions about why this is that. So I'm happy to play that role as well.
Okay.
It is absolutely fascinating to me because I think it's such a hard thing to do and a lot of people do it. And then talk about how they did it. And it's different. Everybody's kind of got their own thing and their own way of doing it. And it's all valuable, even though it oftentimes leads to completely different conclusions. I find it absolutely fascinating. So, they're always fun discussions to have. So I definitely love to be a part of that as well. Alexander, everybody knows where they could find Taylor. If you could remind them where they could find us.
Well, they can find you on Twitter at The Corked Matt. I'm on Twitter at Chase_rate. And most importantly, you can find our podcast on Twitter at Dugout Study Hall, where you can send us some questions. Please be sure to subscribe to the Pitcherless podcast feed if you haven't done that already. Leave us a good review if you can be so kind. And if you're not already, please consider becoming a PL Plus member so that you can harass us on the PL Discord. And that's it for me.
All right. Well, thanks for listening, everybody, and we'll catch you next time.